As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's Jurassic Pod. I'm Eric Corrine from my sick den. Yes, I have caught the old bug, COVID-19 in 2022. What a world. But I'm here. If you hear me coughing, if you hear me sucking on a candy, I'm sorry, guys, but I need to bring the fresh, hot content to you, no matter how in the dumps I might be. Trying to bring the energy level up. She's got, you know, she's been waiting for her opportunity, working on her game, and now she's stepping into a bigger role. Hopefully she doesn't fall flat like Chris Boucher in the Cleveland game when the Raptors only had four Raptors. It's Holly McKenzie. Holly, no big deal. All the pressure is on you, though. How are you?
Oh, wow. I love that I'm coming into this blind and learning about all the pressure I have.
It's important to say, yes.
Well, I do. We all know that I perform so well under pressure. I do not. Obviously, hope you're feeling better. I'm sorry that you are sick, and I appreciate you toughing it out for us today.
Yeah, I'm a gamer.
You are a gamer.
A gamer in that I am not leaving my house except to walk my dog. but I will try to get this content out for you, and hopefully my brain or my cough do not interfere too much. But guys, I could go for a nap. I'm not going to lie to you. But before I nap, we should talk about the Toronto Raptors. And we were very excited about the prospect last time we talked, the prospect of quote-unquote making it. And now we're here, and I'm a little less excited. But that's just me. We don't have to, make my mood everybody's mood. The Raptors finished the season going 48-34 since we last talked. They beat Atlanta, beat Philadelphia in a game we will talk about. I mean, if not directly, we will talk about as it relates to the series that's coming up. Beat Houston, and then without Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam or and just a little bit of OG Anunoby, who returned from a few game absence, five game absence, I believe. They lost to the New York Knicks in a game that had no meaning for anybody. So they finished the year 48-34, finished fifth as Holly McKenzie.
What was that, Eric? Where did they finish? I was
about to segue to you being correct, and you really blew it for yourself there. I was gonna give you credit without you asking, and now you have asked for it.
I don't mind asking.
Yes, you did predict that they would finish fifth. I did not. I predicted, I didn't predict a place, but I predicted they would lose in the play-in.
Didn't you also predict, at the beginning of the season, didn't you predict they could finish between 6th and 11th?
I think I said 5th and 13th, to be fair.
Okay, even wider net, yeah, amazing.
So we got in there. I caught, that's why the net's so big, Holly. It catches most things. So the Raptors finished 5th. They'll play Philadelphia in the first round. We're going to spend most of the time of this podcast talking about that, but Anything stand out from the final four games of the year, or just wrapping up the season in general? What are your thoughts before we get into the playoffs of it all?
I can't remember what we thought they were going to go over those final three games. I think maybe we thought they would lose to the Hawks.
I think I called two. I know. I called 2-2, and you either called 2-2 or 3-1.
I think I called 3-1, but I did not think the Knicks game would be the game.
Yeah.
That they would lose. But hey, they didn't play a lot of people.
Yeah, we figured it's if fine. The Knicks game mattered, they would probably try. Although it's impossible to say whether they considered fifth or sixth place mattering. Anyway, this is now water under the bridge. They did go 3-1.
Yeah, obviously the story would be their matchup, their game against the Sixers. I think everyone was watching that to see how that would go, and it went quite well for the Raptors.
Yeah, in my regular season, end of regular season awards, I always, one of the categories is best individual performance by a Raptor. And just so we know, that's Holly coughing and not the one who's near death over here. I'm not. I'm fine. I called Pascal Siakam's performance in that game the best individual performance by a Raptor this year. 37 points, 10 rebounds, 12, a career high. No, not a career high. Almost a career high. 12 assists. He was awesome. He got a little bit of everybody except for Matisse Thybul, which we'll also get into. But he fried Tobias Harris. He, when Joel Embiid was guarding him, he this year, this is not for the game, but this year he had 8 assists and no turnovers on possessions where Embiid was guarding him. So obviously dragging Embiid a bit away from the rim and allowing Siakam, not that he didn't score with Embiid on him, but allowing Siakam to operate even more as a playmaker didn't hinder his efficiency as a playmaker, which is great. He was awesome. And I think that, you know, beyond holding Embiid to 10, holding, quote unquote, to 10 for 22 shooting after they held him to 6 for 20 shooting in the last matchup, that's the headline, is that Siakam found a way to contribute, found a number of ways to contribute in, again, what I would call the best all-around performance by a Raptor this year.
Yeah, no, he was incredible. And I feel like we've seen this building, like, as the season has gone on. He's been really good the whole season, if we're being honest. But especially the past, like, 2 months, maybe post-All-Star, just watching, he seems to just be adding more and more to his game night to night. Like, he's not doing one thing one night and then another the next. It's like he just keeps adding things. The meme with is it The Rock holding the huge bag, the meme where it's like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Never mind, this always happens when I try to reference memes to you. I'm sorry. No, it's fine.
It's fine.
I think it is The Rock.
it's probably The Rock. He's pretty memeable.
Yeah, he is. Anyway, that's Pascal, because he just keeps adding to the bag. No, he was amazing. And I think especially looking at that game, but looking at this series, not that we want to jump too far ahead, with Fred managing some things that he's been managing with his knee injury, Pascal being a playmaker helps in that regard. But also, anytime you're able to bring Embiid a bit away from the basket is gonna really help things for the Raptors. So yeah, kind of a crazy preview. Crazy. It seems like the NBA schedule always works out serendipitously, whether it's to give a preview of a playoff matchup, or whether it's the trade deadline and there's trades, and then somehow the first game after the trade deadline is featuring the two teams that made a big trade. Like, the NBA schedule always gives.
Yes, it knows the future. although I would have liked a little heads up from it on the last 3 years. But so it goes.
Yeah.
So overall takeaways on this season, and I promise we will get into the playoff series right after this. What I felt the most is that this team just became so much more comfortable in its own skin as the season went along. And that doesn't mean at moments it didn't look very chaotic, and it doesn't mean it was a straight line of progress, but you saw them flipping from zone to, you know, different types of zones, to strict man, to strict different, to different types of coverages on pick and rolls or on trapping star players. And you saw them able to do it within a quarter or within even a few possessions. And obviously that's how Nick Nurse wants to play, aggressively and unpredictably. And to oversimplify things, they weren't able to do it effectively as the season goes started. But as it went on, they just got progressively stronger at that. I think finishing, I want to say, eighth in defense, dating arbitrary starting point here. But after the Cleveland game that I mentioned in the opening, where they didn't have a team, after that point, they ranked eighth in the league in defense, which is, you know, sort of where... I thought they would end up for the season. They obviously didn't quite get there, but that's a huge key. Like their identity just became so much more apparent after as the season went on.
Yeah, and the identity that the Raptors obviously wanted this team to have, even when you look at the type of players that they have been hoarding on this roster and the things that they could do with that defensive identity, I think that, like you said, it wasn't always, I don't even want to say it wasn't always pretty. It was ugly sometimes watching this team during stretches of this season. But all of those, you know, bad moments and growing pains or whatever were necessary to get them, you know, to where they are today. And you mentioned that Cleveland game, and my God, this season has felt like many seasons sandwiched into one. Oh, yeah, that feels like that was a very long time ago. But yeah, I think that the identity is there, and I think that they are comfortable with it. And they're going to need to really like depend on that identity in this series.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Raptors Sixers, for the first time since 2019, the third time these two teams have played in the playoffs, and each of them have come down to a final shot in Game 7. So, yeah, should be fun. If the first two are any indication. Let's just quickly go over the season series here. On November 11th in Philadelphia, neither Joel Embiid nor Pascal Siakam played. The Raptors won 115-109, a game that culminated with Fred VanVleet's Sam Cassell imitation. In December 28th, so the start of the first game after that Cleveland game, the Sixers won in a, I don't think it was an empty, but a only partial capacity arena, 114-109. It was Embiid's best offensive game. He dominated, but also weirdly, the Sixers were a -4 in the minutes that he played, which was the complete opposite of the final two games, in which the Raptors won both by 5, 93-88 and 119-114, the latter being the game we just discussed. And in both of those games, Embiid's his offensive efficiency was either so-so or straight up bad for him. That's not to say he didn't put up numbers, but it was just harder than usual. And yet the Sixers won his minutes quite comfortably, and they lost the very few minutes, I think 11 minutes in each case, in each game that he didn't play, by, I think it was by 13 and 15 in different cases, in the two different cases. And that, of course, was the story of the 2019 series. Embiid did not score efficiently. The Sixers still dominated when he played and absolutely fell apart when he didn't play. So let's talk about the Joel Embiid of it all. And I think a natural place to start is with a question we got from a listener, from Ali Abbasi. He says, is there any chance of Precious Achiuwa starting, considering he's been Embiid's best defender? And if so, who would he replace in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I do think there's a chance of that. I don't know if they would do that from the jump. Do you think that that's something that Nick Nurse would do to start? Or do you think that's more of a, like, if game one, game two, whatever, doesn't, if we don't get the start that we want, we will look into switching that.
If I had to bet, so every time the Raptors will just use starting five, because whenever they were, whenever all five players were available, Van Vliet, Trent, Ananobi, Siakam, and Barnes were available, he started them in every game together, and all but one half. I believe in the Minnesota game, to deal with Karl Anthony Towns, they started Precious Achiuwa in the second half, bringing Scottie Barnes off the bench. So, and all of those guys, individuals, started every game except for Gary Trent, who did not start in the season opener against Washington, coming off the bench, we all remember, for Goran Dragic.
Again, this season, it has been long.
So my guess right now is that Nurse goes with the five that he's gone to when he's had them available, but I don't feel strongly about it. Today, Nick Nurse said, you know, obviously wasn't revealing his starting lineup. He said that there are good reasons to maybe start either Precious or Khem Birch. I almost think Khem Birch is maybe slightly more likely to start, just because Nurse loves, he said it outright, he loves having Boucher and Achiuwa together to come off the bench.
Do you love that? Would you prefer Precious over Khem of those two?
So I would prefer Precious. I understand wanting to have some sense of normality with those guys coming off the bench. And honestly, if you're using Khem Birch, it's more of a 3 or 4 minute thing. Let him pick up the first few fouls that Embiid draws. And then you start rotating into your normal lineups. But I think the playoffs become so important and every minute becomes so important that I'm not necessarily sure. If there's a series that Khem Birch belongs, it's probably this one. But I'm not positive he belongs in a playoff series for the Raptors right now. So I think you got to go with your players who have been most productive for the most part. I think Precious has been a very good defender on Joel Embiid, while keeping in mind that he's not doing it alone, and they send all sorts of different looks and schemes and defenders at him. It's not just Achiuwa, but he certainly has, if not the strength, the athleticism and the quickness to deal with everything that he can do, that Embiid can do on the floor. So, long story short, I think they'll use the normal starting five to start. I would put it at like maybe 60-40. I think it's probably Scottie Barnes who's the most likely to come off the bench. How about you?
I think I agree with that. I definitely agree with thinking that if this change does happen, it's more likely to happen after a game. You know what I mean? Like after Nick sees how his normal starting five works. I didn't hear his quotes today on the availability they had today, but I do think it's clear that he does really like that Boucher Precious duo, like coming in together off the bench. So if he could keep that, especially because in this series, I mean, well, in any game, but especially in a series, as you said, with every minute mattering so much, the Raptors bench has had, you know, its issues this season. So when you have two pieces that really work well together, I think that he would like to keep that. But it's interesting because hearing you say that he seemed more open to it, like hearing you say you're 60-40 for game one, like to stick with the starting five, that now has me kind of second guessing, because I'm wondering what you heard that's having you be 60-40, because I would have assumed that it would be starting five for game one, see how it goes, and adjust if needed. Obviously, with the playoffs, you're going to make adjustments much faster. So, you know, that could be as quickly as game two or the second half of game
one. To.
you know, like you have to. But now that you're saying that, it almost has me second guessing myself and thinking that maybe he will just come out and start Precious. I don't know. Precious has just been such a good defender on Joelle. And I mean, you say someone's been great on Joelle, and that means, you know, Joelle's merely been great and not like,
yeah, the way I put it. So we're sort of going to take this point by point here, but in I wrote an article. I tend to do this before playoff series.
Subscribe to The Athletic.
Thank you. I wrote about the Raptors' roadmap to an upset in this series. And my first point, which we've talked about unintentionally, is that the Raptors make Joel Embiid be all-star good, not MVP good.
Yeah,
and like his numbers...
You're not going to stop him.
His numbers this year against the Raptors were 29 points, 11.3 rebounds, 2.7 assists per game, with a shooting percentage of 58.6. That's in 36 minutes. And his numbers for the year... in 34 minutes per game, were 30.6 points, 11.7 rebounds, 4.2 assists. So there's a massive difference in assists. That's almost where the biggest difference is, and a true shooting percentage of 61.6. So there are differences, but like overall, it's, you know, not like this huge gap, but that, you know, making him have a difficult time passing out of your traps, making him a bit less efficient with the shots he gets off. That's the difference between winning and losing a series, potentially, especially when the rest of the Sixers, there are lots of questions about them. So my second point in this article about how the Raptors pull off this upset is that Pascal Siakam, not James Harden, is the second best player in this series. I think we've already talked about Siakam, and we'll continue to, but we got a question from Paul Anderson, says, do you believe with the rest that Harden and all the players, of course, got in between the end of the regular season and the playoffs, will he come out with more life and vigor and cause more issues for the Raptors?
This is a question, and that this is a valid question to me, says everything about Harden's season and also his season with the Sixers. You know what I mean? Like the fact that we're actually questioning if this player, who's, you know, one of the best players we've seen.
Yeah, Hall of Famer, like whatever you want to say about his playoff career, like obvious Hall of Famer, one of the greatest guards, most productive guards we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that it could help him because I think... looking at his season, whenever he has had rest, he has, you know, started his first game back, first couple games back, he has been more active and had more energy and had better games, you know? But I think you kind of, when you touched on the Pascal being the second best player, I think that's true as well. But I also think a big thing is going to be who is more of a facilitator and playmaker for their team. Like, who's going to be the better playmaker? Is it going to be Pascal or is it going to be Harden? Because Harden being the playmaker, even when he's not, like, his scoring self, is very scary to me. Like, Harden as the playmaker scares me.
Yeah, I did not a Q&A, but a back and forth with Sixers writer Rich Hoffman. Also, you can find that at The Athletic. And he said two things that were very interesting, and let's see if my COVID brain can remember them. The first thing is he said what you just said. When the best that Harden has looked as a Sixer is following the All-Star break, which was following that time he sat out with injury. And as the schedule got a bit busier, his burst and his productivity, you know, regardless of aesthetics, certainly jumped or certainly trailed off a little bit. And he was not very good in either of those games against the Raptors. The second thing was actually a question or a point about the Raptors is he was saying if he were the Raptors, he would leave like the complicated schemes and all this, you know, defending and trapping and all of that, that should be for Embiid. For Harden, what he's done, even though the numbers say he continues to be a very effective isolation player, if he has to beat you with his step back or at the rim, The numbers say this year that he has not been as effective as in the past at doing that. And the eye test certainly says that he is not as effective as a scorer as he has been. Like, mm-hmm. he still had whatever it was, 15 assists or something like that against the Raptors in that last game. But he was plainly not much of a scoring threat. So I'm not that interested in who guards Harden. I think we'll see a bit of, you know, the main guys on him. It will be Siakam. It will be Ananobi. I'm sure we'll get the first and longest cracks. But, like, only four or five players guarded Harden more than Scottie Barnes this season in terms of possessions. So all of those guys are going to get a chance. But how much... Like, if you remember that Houston game, like, all those years ago when they were basically doubling James Harden once he crossed half court and making him pass it, and Ben McLemore was hitting a bunch of open threes. We're not
What year are we talking about?
I think that was the bubble year.
Not the 2009 Kawhi year.
I think it was 2019-20 in December.
Got it.
So they, like, completely took the ball out of his hands. You are not beating
him. Oh, gosh, I hated that game. I do remember that game. Ben McLemore was amazing.
Yeah, so the Raptors...
I do remember that game.
The Raptors aren't going to do that against James Harden in this series. I guess my question is, where on the continuum would you like to see the Raptors be between, we'll switch everything, basically, but we're guarding him one-on-one, and we'll provide help if he beats the first guy. So basically normal man-to-man defense versus something like that extreme, which we saw 2.5 years ago.
I agree with Rich.
Rich,
yeah. Did you say it was Rich? Yeah, I agree with him for sure on this. The thing that scares me about this, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that scare me about the Sixers. And I'm not trying to say that James Harden couldn't suddenly show up and drop 35 and 15. Because he could, you know, that's always a threat with a player like this. But what scares me with Harden is him being the playmaker and getting their other shooters involved. I think that that is a bigger threat to me than just letting Harden do what he's doing when you're also obviously going to be focused on Joel and needing to try to make everything as difficult as possible on him. And if there is a player, funny enough, if there is a player on the Sixers that makes me nervous outside of Joel, it's Maxey.
Yes, he is.
Which I may be jumping a little bit ahead here, but
he is. The way I put it in my conversation with Rich is he's too big of a factor to be called an X factor. Like, he's not the main story, but he's not.
I almost feel like Harden is more of an X factor, which sounds crazy, but, like, Harden, you're kind
of. It's more of an unknown, I think.
You don't know what you're going to get, right? Like,
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And I feel like that's disrespectful to say about a player of his caliber.
Watch the game with your eyes. None of us, you know, would be shocked if Harden puts up 25, 15, and 8 games. Like, he has that.
So what do you think? Like, I want to flip this question back around on you. What do you think the Raptors should
do? Yeah, I think the right thing is to let your, you know, something that Nick Nurse said before the season, or early in the season at least, was the point of having all these interchangeable defenders isn't necessarily to throw all these weird traps at you. Eventually, we want all these guys to be able to look their assignments, whether they're stars or not, square in the eyes, and just guard them. And I think, you know, the specter of, oh, that's James Harden, and this is how we've prepared for him in the past, makes you say, or at least think, well, maybe this Raptors team isn't ready for that. Maybe they need all that scheming and all that help to beat somebody as experienced and capable as James Harden. But I kind of want to see it from Harden. I want to see him beat those guys. I want to see him...
You want to make him force the Raptors
make
into
him do it a few times.
A change
before you change. That sort of would be my approach. That's not to say you keep on doing the same thing over and over again. Like, Harden is so smart. That's part of
Yeah.
Part of his, you know, what makes him so great. So you can't just say one-on-one every time down the court, and because he's going to figure that out. But I think you need to lean in that direction.
The other thing with Harden that is a concern, and I think a valid concern, is free throws and foul trouble. he's pretty good at that, even though he's not the same player he was a couple years ago. with respect to that, that could be a concern.
The Sixers in general shooting free throws.
Yeah.
And you segue into my next point, which I'm not sure.
Wow.
Yeah, no. It's almost like you read my article. I know you didn't, but
I actually did not. but I was gonna say, usually we have like a pretty, you know, cohesive rundown, and today we thought we would just go through
the things that matter,
the series, without a rundown, and it's kind of working out. Wow, I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised. Continue.
So the third key to a Raptors upset is that the referees err toward letting them play instead of calling games tightly.
Is this really your key?
Yes. And okay. Let's say out front, there will be different referees on every game. There will be different fields in every game. There will be a different line.
Listen, I get nervous even mentioning officiating and the playoffs and the Raptors and the Sixers.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
And the Raptors and the officials and the playoffs and the Raptors, because it gets very...
Yeah. Let's not all put it in the referees. I worded it a bit tongue-in-cheek there. But... a key to the Raptors' defense this year, it sort of felt like my throat squeaked a bit there. I definitely went higher pitch than I'm used to. A key toward the improvement defensively is, as the year went on, fouls and free throw rate went way up across the league. So you can understand how the teams are committing more fouls, teams are shooting more free throws. to begin the year, the Raptors were ranking 21st in opponent free throw rate. After that Cleveland game, again, which is just a line of delineation I am making for the sake of ease, they improved to the 13th lowest opponent free throw rate. Basically, they were fouling less. They were, you know, putting teams on the line a little bit less often, which... I shouldn't say that, actually, because the free throw rate actually did go up. It just didn't go up anywhere near what the league average did. So the Raptors found a way to curb their fouling habits. So part of that is the referees, but part of that is knowing your game plans. And this comes...
Do you feel confident that they will continue to not fall back on fouling in the playoffs?
So Nick Nurse said they drill it how to, and I think they were talking particularly about James Harden and the way he has in the past stuck out his arms so you can foul him across them, though you're just trying to make some trouble at the ball. And they can scheme for the, or not scheme, again, they can practice that. Of course, it's one thing to do it in the regular season, and it's one thing to do it in the playoffs. I think both coaches, they're not Brad Stevens out there. They'll both be on the referees rather enthusiastically, I would say. Harden, Embiid, Siakam, Van Vliet, to different levels, are all in the referees' ears all game. I would almost be surprised. I think Nick Nurse said today, what was the line he used? He said it was going to be a very physical series. I'll find the exact phrasing in a bit. I would be surprised if the referees aren't calling it very tightly in game one. But I expect that, first of all, I expect the Raptors to get better as the series goes along, because that's generally what they do. And second of all, I think that will vary from game to game. And so that's sort of how I see it. Where are you?
I don't even know why I'm going through with this. I'm definitely going to ask for this to be cut, but here we go. Hearing you talk about the playoffs and the intensity and the difference between a regular season and the postseason, I'm going to make a comparison here that I don't think anyone has ever made, and I don't even know why I'm doing this, but this is where my brain is, and I
don't. You can always get off the road now. You can take an exit. It's right there for you.
I feel like I have to commit, even if it's just to.
All right, go on. Get on.
Be honest with myself. So I watched the show called The Vampire Diaries, which may be a surprise to you. This was a few years ago. I fell into it, like binged them all. Yeah. It's an absurd show. It's about vampires. I mean, how can it not be? It got pretty bad as it continued, but I stuck it out. Yeah. One of the few who did. Anyway, there's this word that they always use in that show as you turn into a vampire and you describe your senses and whatever. And it got to the point where every time it would happen, I would like be like, God, this should be a drinking game, and you should drink every time they say your senses are heightened, your experiences are heightened. And hearing you talk about the playoffs was making me feel like, yeah, every like instinct you have is heightened. All of the like teachings and things that your coaching staff has tried to drill in you is heightened. But also the importance of every possession is heightened. So you're like fighting with yourself to be like, don't stick your arm out. Like, don't put yourself in a position for Harden to like goad you or bait you into a foul. But at the same time, you have the instinct of don't let him score here. Don't let him get going here. Don't let him make the right pass, because you know how much each possession means, each point means, but also you don't want to let him get going. So it's that like push and pull. I don't know why I'm comparing the playoffs to Vampire Diaries.
No, yeah. It worked. And to your credit, Nick Nurse also compared the playoffs to the Vampire. No, I'm joking. But he did.
I would have fallen on the floor. That would have happened.
But continue. He did say that it's probably harder in the playoffs for the reason you point out. Like, whether it's, you know, every possession matters more, or you just feel more urgency to make a play. You know, the types of plays the Raptors often make. Like, think about the way Gary Trent defends, right? Like, he's always reaching. He's always, you know, trying to disrupt the ball.
He's going to try. He's going to go for it. Yeah.
So,
which is great. And I love that, but it's also scary in the playoffs because.
Scary. You have to, it has to be disciplined. It has to be well timed. And I think it's probably safe to say that's something that's going to take a while for the Raptors to figure out. Like, that would.
But you know what? I trust this team so much more going into this series than I would have if you talked to me, you know, 2 months 2 months ago. Like, kind of going back to what you said at the beginning of the podcast when you were talking about their identity and how it feels like they've really, like, found that. I also. And maybe I will be completely proven wrong and we'll have to talk about this next week. But I know, as stressful as the postseason is, and especially for like a guy like Scotty who's never seen the postseason, you know, like there are nerves, et cetera, et cetera. I just feel like they know themselves, or they know their identity so well. Like, they're so, it is so ingrained in them at this point, that I do trust this team not to suddenly fall apart in ways that I have not trusted a Raptors team in the postseason in the past.
Particularly young Raptors teams.
A young team. Where are you with that? Like, do you think I'm being, I mean, I know you usually think I'm being too positive, but I don't know. I just feel like, and especially because so much of that identity this entire season has been defensively, you know, it has been rebounding and running and creating turnovers and, you know, just messing things up for the other team, that, you know, I don't want to simplify it to just hustle plays, but I don't think that's going to change, because in the postseason, your defense only becomes more important. So, like, where are you with what
I think I'm sort of in between, like, your perspective and like, oh my God, they're gonna fold.
Oh, great.
Yeah, no, I'm in between there.
Eric Corine, they could finish between 5th and 13th, and they could be incredibly poised, or oh my God, they're gonna fold.
No, they'll be somewhat poised. That's the prediction. Put it on the Philadelphia 76ers bulletin board. The Raptors will be somewhat poised, says Raptors beat writer.
I think
they'll figure it out as the series goes on, but the way, like, they're just you know, not only with the fouling and what we're talking about specifically, but like, you know, the 76ers, like the first two things on the scouting report is going to be get back in transition. And that's, and you can say that's always true, but you don't have time in the regular season to really think about it like that. And the playoffs are already when transition, you know, becomes a limited, more limited transition opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's what scares me, so, is like the Raptors,
I guess, do the Raptors
in half court.
Yeah, do the Raptors have the patience? I mean, for they have to try. That's not to say you don't try to get it, to get the ball moving in transition. But if the 76ers are, you know, 10% more alert than they are in the regular season when it comes to limiting live ball turnovers, do the Raptors have the patience to deal with the added physicality, to deal with, you know, the scoreless droughts that will come with a lot of half-court possessions in a row, and not get down on themselves? And that's, you know, I have varying degrees of faith in different players, but, like, this isn't a team that is swimming in postseason experience or shooting. Mm-hmm. And, like, shooting, like, supreme shooting talent is sort of the one thing that can overcome that lack of half-court experience, and the Raptors don't have it. Like, so that's more than anything what makes me nervous about the Raptors' ability to adjust to quote-unquote playoff basketball.
Yeah, it's funny because coming into this, I was like, yeah, I feel really good about about the Raptors. And I've noticed that I've said, that's what scares me, like six times already. So I didn't realize there were six things that scared me. But yeah, here we are.
That will be my next writer, my next column. Six things that scare me about this series.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This seems like a good time to briefly talk about Matisse Thybul. He's not eligible to play in Toronto because he only got one, as he said. He took one Pfizer dose, got sick.
It's so frustrating to me. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, I was hoping to avoid this conversation, but you go on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is not even about Matisse. It's just like a bigger picture. I don't know if this is the proper role of media, and I don't even know if this could happen. But it's so frustrating to me when these situations come up. We know what they are. You will go into detail. It's fine. We don't need to like go back and forth on that. I'm sure people know our thoughts. That's fine. It's so frustrating when these situations come up that it gives players an opportunity to say things, which everyone should have a right to say their opinion, I guess. But the problem is it's giving an opportunity to there's a point where an opinion is an opinion, and an opinion can't be right and wrong. Sure. But there are also facts. And some of these quotes they can be misunderstood or facts are misinterpreted. And when these statements come out, then everyone's reporting on what the player said, as they should, because that's the job of a reporter, to report what's being said. I get that, but it makes me wonder, and I'm not in these rooms because I haven't been covering anything live this season. It makes me wonder, is there an opportunity for a reporter to respond with a fact? I mean, it probably doesn't make a difference, but it's just frustrating to me that every time this comes up, and it's come up more than once, and I understand why you have to ask and get a quote, but then it seems like we have a whole news cycle of seeing quotes that are not accurate.
That's yeah. Specifically, he says once he got sick after the first dose, he wanted to treat it. I forgot the word he used as in a more natural way. And I would just say, you know, nobody ever said that the Pfizer, like at any point, nobody said that the Pfizer dose would be effective solely on one dose. It was always
also just anytime I do feel it's important to say that if someone thinks, why should I do this because I think I'll be okay, it's not always about you.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're lucky enough to have a great immune system, amazing. Not everybody does. That's all I will say on that.
How big of a factor, which was the question I was going to ask you, do you think is thigh bowels?
I think it'll be a big factor. Yeah. Defensively, I think it'll be a big factor. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to take us down that road, but...
Well, sometimes you have to walk down the path that is there for you. Yeah, I don't think, like, he's a real factor in terms of guarding Siakam. Like, I'm sure he'd get some of that assignment, but, like, he gives up 4 inches. He's probably not the guy that you want. But he makes a huge difference in terms of guarding Van Vliet and Gary Trent. Like, I think Gary Trent in particular is going to have a really tough time at the start of this series, or at least is going to have to deal with that guy who, you know, full disclosure, I put on...
He really bothers him.
I put on one of my all-defense teams this year because he is such a smart and active defender. And, you know, when he's not out there, it means your guard rotation is Danny Green and Tyrese Maxey. And then and James Harden. And James Harden is, you know, often like, we're switching everything unless it involves Embiid. And like the Raptors offense the half court offense for as clumsy as it can be, they love attacking mismatches. And if you've got one more weak defender out there, it means you've got one more mismatch to create an attack. That is a big deal for the Raptors.
I also think even beyond just, specific matchups and impact, I think it is not ideal to have to go into a series knowing that the way you can start your lineup in the first two games, however it goes, you have to switch it up and you're going to lose a player who is a part of your rotation, you know? Like, not ideal. So, yeah, I do think that is an issue for the Sixers. That being said, it's an issue that could have been negated. So, that's all we need to say on that.
Question from Matt Jenkinson. Do you think Scottie Barnes' inexperience will be used against him by the 76ers, or can he continue to be a strong player for the Raptors throughout the playoffs?
We sort of touched on this. I think they'll probably try to. I think that that's the smart thing to do. But I feel like with Scottie, the thing that has made him so special this year is there have been stretches where he hasn't been very good at one thing, and then he's just found a way to do something else. Or when he's looked unsure or had, you know, an off shooting night or hasn't even like looked to shoot, he'll get offensive rebounds or he'll play really good defense. Or, you know, he's just, I don't think that you can really game plan to take away those parts of someone's game. And I think he will still, even if his numbers aren't like glowing or he does look unsure, I still think that he can make an impact when he's on the floor. So I don't worry about that as much as I maybe would with a lot of other rookies.
Yeah, the most interesting thing to me is, let's say the Raptors start with their usual starting lineup. I would guess that Embiid will be on Scottie Barnes to start because he's the least of the shooting threats, basically, and it allows Embiid to more easily be at the rim. So we saw, I asked Pascal Siakam about this today and, you know, he gave the general, like, I'm always aggressive. You know, you have to read what the defense is giving you. But like, he was a guy, a young player, or let's say a relatively
Sorry, they asked
you. I asked Pascal.
Okay.
He was a guy in 2019 who was relatively inexperienced. And from games 2 to 7, the 76ers put Joel Embiid on Pascal Siakam. That was the main matchup. Mm-hmm. And Siakam had a very difficult time navigating what to do with that sort of, you know, they were sort of daring him to either shoot or use that cushion as a runway. And Pascal got stuck in between sometimes. His, you know, his jumper just hadn't developed to the same place. And the push shot certainly hadn't developed to the same place where they are now. And for a guy who loves to pass and loves to make plays for others, I guess my question regarding Barnes is, when Embiid is guarding him, how is he making himself fit in, especially when he gets the ball, but also like that he's enough of a threat so that Embiid can't just get comfortable hanging out a foot outside the rim, ready to help whenever there's a driver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, well, I guess we'll see.
You know, I mean, but yeah, I just, for sure. It's just like, that's my, because I love Barnes.
That's your concern.
I love Barnes' mentality. Like, I think he'll find a way, like, much like we've said about the Raptors in general. But, like, that is, like, the X's and O's question that, you know, as smart and as energetic as a guy is, you have to figure that out in real time. And you're figuring it out in real time against one of the best defenders in the league.
I do feel like Scotty has shown an amazing ability to adapt and a basketball intelligence that is like way far beyond his years and experience. So his ability to like learn something or be told something and then adjust really quickly, I think has stood out a lot this year. So that'll definitely be put to the test, as you said. It'll be interesting to see how that, if that continues. You said that you thought if they do change the starting lineup, it would be Scotty to come off the bench.
Is that
correct? Yeah. It would be interesting to see if that affects him at all. You know, like sometimes players are fine coming off the bench. Sometimes that can rattle them. You know, I guess I'm not really worried about Scotty. I don't know. Maybe that's a huge blind spot that I have, but I just feel like he can impact a game in many ways, in little ways, and I just don't worry about him as much. Maybe that's my mistake.
I'm generally with you. I'm just thinking about the matchups and having a little tiny question. By the way, do you want to hear the list of the last 10 players who in their rookie seasons played at least 15 minutes per game in the playoffs?
Sure.
I tell you this because it's going to take us back further than you think, because it doesn't happen very often. So in 2020, it was Michael Porter Jr. and Tyler Hero. So that means there was nobody last year who did that. In 2018, there were three guys: Jason Tatum, Ben Simmons, and do you have any quick guesses?
No, because I can't think of years.
OG Anunoby.
Wow. Listen, why isn't Luka? Was Luka not
in the playoffs? They didn't make the playoffs in his rookie season.
See, that's the problem. The problem is that this is coinciding with the pandemic, and I can't remember. So the bubble was not his rookie year.
Yeah. Okay, 2016, Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, both on the Miami Heat team that the Raptors beat. 2014, Steven Adams. And then 2013, we have to go all the way back there for Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green, who played at least 15 minutes for their team. I didn't really know what to expect when I looked at it. And I knew, like, obviously teams that have very good rookies and contributing rookies
usually aren't making long
or significant playoff runs. But, like, for it to be that rare kind of surprised me. That's all.
No, that is pretty crazy.
And I think Scotty Barnes is going to average more than 15 minutes in this series, Holly.
Yeah.
So it's another one of my hot takes they can put up on the Sixers bulletin board.
I think so.
Quickly, before we get to our predictions, my fourth and fifth points: Fred VanVleet has to be healthy enough to be super annoying. And by that, I think we already got into the transition. But we saw, William Liu of the Raptors show on Fan 590 did that super clip of the game. He forced 11 turnovers. He's just very responsive. Whether he gets the steals himself or initiates the play that creates the steal, he is so responsible for getting the Raptors that turnover and getting them into the position to be running. And if his knee isn't healthy enough to, you know, whether it's digging down on Embiid in the post, which obviously is one of the best in the league at doing that, whether it's helping as a help defender on a drive from Harden or somebody else, or Maxi, who I'll give you the floor to talk about a bit after this, he needs to be healthy enough to do that. I'm not expecting him to be like, you know, slicing up the defense and you know, I have a lot of faith in his clutch shot making ability, but it, you know, he's obviously not been as good in that element as he was in the first half of the season. But they really need him on defense.
Yeah, it's interesting because the same question that you posed about Harden getting the rest and how that would affect him kind of makes me think about Fred. I mean, I don't know how many days it'll be like since he last played, but it's over a week, right?
Yeah, he last...
Like 8 or 9 days?
He last played against Atlanta on Tuesday, and so it will be to the next Saturday. So we're looking at 10 off days until in between games.
Oh, so not too... Okay. So, like, yeah, that's a pretty good break for any player during the run of the season, and especially at this part of the season. I don't think he's magically going to, you know, feel as good as he did at the start when the season started. But I hope that that will be... You'll be able to see an impact from his time off. But I think the biggest thing with Fred is that you... We've talked so many times about how you kind of have to protect him from himself because he's never gonna give in to pain or injury or any of those things. But in the postseason, if he's out there, if there's an opportunity, he's gonna find a way to make it happen, I think. So yeah, I really hope he's able to, because I know how much it'll bother him if he can't impact the game the way that he wants. But yeah, it's pretty important. If he isn't able to do the things that make him kind of lead this defense of the Raptors to get out and run and get extra possessions and extra points. Extra possessions is going to be so important.
I mean, it has been all year.
All season, but especially in this postseason and especially against the Sixers. And the Sixers are so good at rebounding that, you know, any way that you can get those extra possessions, that the Raptors have been so good at offensive rebounding that, like, if those opportunities are going to come down, those steals and things like that, forcing turnovers is going to become even more important. So, yeah, I think that's a crucial thing. We cannot see the future, so I don't know. I hope that the time off will help him. And yeah, I think if he can, you know, do those things that you mentioned, that helps the Raptors a lot. Without that, it's difficult.
Just one point of correction. The Sixers have actually been a very mediocre offense or rebounding team.
I feel like they've been really good.
They haven't.
Maybe I'm just thinking of Embiid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a monster, but...
Like his presence, but yeah.
The Raptors, I believe, killed them on the glass in that win in Philly in March. I think a little less so this last game, but they're not a particularly good rebounding team.
I think that goes to show just how dominant Embiid is and his presence, because to me, that's something that I worry about. Like, I just feel like he's going to gobble everything.
I mean, he might, which is why it's so important for the Raptors, in part, to bring him out from the rim.
Yeah.
Quick Van Vliet question, and this will allow you to talk about Tyrese Maxey. Would you rather Van Vliet on Maxey or on Danny Green / Thybulle, so he can be more of that helper? And just what in particular scares you about Maxey?
He's really good. I think I would prefer Fred on Maxey, even with... the limitations that you just mentioned, just because he's the guy on the Sixers that can really get out and run and push the ball. He's, you know, a great finisher at the rim, and that concerns me. And I think that's something that the Raptors will need to try to, like, limit and contain as best as they can. And that's why I would think I would want Fred on him if he's able to take on that task.
Yeah, I think any chance they have to put Van Vliet on Thybulle, I would do that. But the Sixers don't have a lot of non-shooters on the outside other than that. So, because, like, you know, I don't care if Fred leaves Thybulle because I want him creating all the chaos he can inside defensively. But you can't really do that with Danny Green or Maxey, or certainly Harden. But yeah, that should... yeah, Maxey is scary, and I would say if the Raptors have a defensive weakness, like a player-type weakness, it is those, like, quicker, jitterbuggy guards, like, you know, Trae Young being the most obvious example. Like, the Raptors are least equipped to guard those players. Weirdly, with a roster that has no seven-footer, they're perhaps less equipped to guard six-foot-two really fast guys. Last point. And I'll form it as in the phrase of the question. I would say for the Raptors to win this series, the Raptors need one of Precious Achiuwa or Chris Boucher to, as I put it, pop in this series, to, you know, have a few games where they're making everything, or at least a lot of things. Who do you have more faith in going into the playoffs in terms of being a consistent, producer?
Yeah, I think this is a series for Precious to continue building on the strong strides he's made to close out the season. And I think I would have said that regardless of who the opponent was, just based on his play, but especially knowing the defensive job that he, or the defensive effort, I should say, he can give against Joel. I'm really curious to see what Precious can do in this series. What about you?
So I agree. It would be great if the answer were Precious, because he is a more important defensive part, specifically for this series. Chris Boucher has a history of really doing nasty things to the Sixers, though. I had a few fans in my mention, because I mentioned that, you know, I'm sure that the Sixers will be letting the likes of Achiuwa and Boucher and Thad Young and Scotty Barnes take threes. And a few fans, Sixers fans, were like, I hope we don't let Chris Boucher take those shots. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, what shots are you going to be trying to allow if you're not, you know, sort of living with Chris Boucher three-pointers? Like, not every possession can be a 24-second shot clock violation, my dudes. But yeah, I think it would be great if it were Achiuwa. I'm not sure what the answer is. Another just getting out of the way of actually answering my own questions. My last question, I promise to answer this. Who you got?
Raptors in six.
I picked Sixers in seven. I really think it's super even. And at the end of the day, Joel Embiid.
Yeah. That's, I'm realizing I'm much more scared than I thought I was going through this.
I mean, I think it's a great matchup for the Raptors. I think they can do a lot of damage. And I just think they were going to be the underdog in any of the first round series. This is probably the most desirable of all of those. And yet it is, unless I'm super, super confident in everything else, it's hard for me to pick against the team that has the best player. And I'm just not quite there on mainly, let's face it, the half court offense. I just think there will be a few too many scoring ruts that will doom them ultimately. But, you know, this is, I say Sixers and seven as an ultimate, like, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, hopefully a seven game pick lets you know how certain I am of that.
Yeah, the nightmare scenario would be like a 5 or 6 minute scoring drought in the fourth quarter. Like that would be, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to vomit watching this game kind of scenario. And it's not off the board at all with this team. So that's not great.
I would prepare yourself for one or two of those a game. Hopefully not at the wrong time.
Yeah, not great. Starting on the road is interesting. You know, we'll see how that goes. I don't know. I just, sorry. Again, I'm not the one who's sick. I just really like this team. And maybe it's just that they've come up big in games when I didn't think that they should or would, or when there's been a lot of attention on them. They've played relatively well against the Sixers this season, considering they've had players not available. We'll see how things go. Obviously, like I said, who knows? We just talked about Harden being not the guy. Watch him come out and have a huge monstrous game one. But yeah, I'm going to say Raptors in six. And I just get really worried about Joel Embiid.
I think that's a...
Like when
that's a rational concern.
I just picture him just... Anyway, it's fine. I predict the Raptors in six. We'll see how it goes.
Yep.
And I think at the beginning of the season, if you would have told anybody that the Raptors were going to finish fifth, we're going to face the Sixers in the first round, bypass the play-in tournament, if the Raptors would be in the playoffs and like the Lakers wouldn't, I think people would be like, you're crazy.
Yeah, if you weren't taking that at the beginning of the season, I think you have a perspective issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it from us. We'll come back at you after game two of this series. Holly, thank you very much.
Thanks for sticking this out. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
We all appreciate it.
And to the listeners, thank you for listening. Please continue to do so and follow what I'm writing over at The Athletic. And we will talk to you after game two. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.